Father, we thank you for this time together and just all the friends and fellow brothers and sisters that you bless each of us with here at this church and everyone here and our families. And we thank you that we have each other. We thank that we have you and that we can serve you by serving each other and demonstrating our love to you, by demonstrating our love to each other. And there are all kinds of needs within our body, within our family, and within the immediate families outside our immediate body. And you know those needs. There's flood victims in Houston. There are family members who have suffered some damage, but were spared others, and we're thankful for that. We've got illnesses and families that are suffering, and we pray for them and their the recovery. Their healing, their peace in the condition that they're going through, the family situations as well. And we ask that you would be with this talk tonight, that we would be able to communicate kind of what we saw here in Kenya and what it was like there, and so that we can just help us understand what's going on in other places and in other church communities. So we ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen. All right. So tonight, what my original plan was for Sharon and Priscilla to be up here too, sharing in this discussion or this presentation about our trip to Kenya at the end of July and first part of August. But seems I'm the only one up here, so I'm the only one doing the talking. So if you guys, if I say something wrong or if you have anything to chime in, please do. And I would also say this, too. I'd like this to be about as informal as we can get. So if you've got any questions about what we saw, what things were like, something I don't bring up or didn't think to bring up, then just feel free to raise your hand. Ask me. If I say something that's not clear or you want more explanation, I'll try to do that. So we'll get started. What I want to start with first is that first, why did we go? Because in lots of situations, or I'll say this, in thinking about going on mission trips before, Sharon and I talked about it, and we thought, well, we're not sure because, you know, you go on a short-term mission trip, you're not exactly sure what's being accomplished there. If it's effective, if it really does anything other than kind of maybe disrupt their normal flow of things. And so that's been hard to kind of think through that stuff. And a couple of years ago, I joined the board at Village Ministries International that most of you probably know about. And I'd go to these board meetings and we'd hear about the pastors and these ministries that are going on in these different countries. And I started thinking that I needed to meet some of these people. It would be good to see them and meet them and kind of see what they're like. And so that got me thinking and got us thinking, for probably at least a year or more before we actually went, probably a couple of years, just kind of waiting for the opportunity to maybe be able to go and meet someone that we've been hearing about but not met. And so the opportunity came up for us to go to Kenya, to Eldoret, Kenya, and meet a pastor named Peter Simwa. And that got started probably we had a board meeting in April, and I think we started to really start, well, it was actually February, I think, when we decided to do it and got the ball rolling for that. And then, Priscilla joined us as things got firm and we knew we were going. And I think we did make an announcement at the church, and Priscilla decided to join too. And we're glad that she did, and don't know exactly the reasons, personally why you joined, but those are the reasons why Sharon and I went. So we got everything together, and we left on the 27th of July. And like I said, we went to go meet Peter Simwa, and he's the VMI partner. I guess you call him partner in Eldoret, Kenya, and basically in Kenya. That's kind of his area. He lives in Eldoret with his wife Caroline. They have a 15-year-old daughter. I think her name was Melanie. Is that right? And I think his son was 10, and I forgot his name. Oh well, look at the cute little kid. They're all cute. So VMI actually met Peter, became aware of him about 9 years ago. Peter had somehow he had become aware of the foundation material, and he actually had emailed VMI about getting a foundations book. Now, foundations is a book that VMI publishes. They created it. Pastor Drew Freeman primarily was the one that wrote it, with input from some others. It is a kind of an overview to use in the mission field for these pastors to become educated about this doctrines that we take that we know of, like the doctrine of the Bible, systematic theology. There's a whole section in the book that covers each book of the Bible, and there's a summary of the book, an outline, and a short discussion of it. And then there's a section in the book about how to study the Bible, and then there's a systematic theology section of the book. And that's kind of the basics of it. But the purpose of Foundations is to get some information, some resource to these pastors, these typically village pastors, but in this case it's in a city, that don't have access to good doctrinal material. And so that's what they use to do it. And it's been translated into many languages, and in particular, and as it relates to us, I mean, it's been translated into Swahili, and so Swahili is what they speak here, and it's the resource that Peter wanted, and they got to him. That was about 9 years ago, and some guys from VMI went over there and did some conferences. They gave him the book. They did some conferences, which is what VMI tends to do. They'll provide the book, but they'll also send people over there, pastors and teachers, that will teach the material in the book, and so that these pastors understand what's in there, and then they can take it and they can study it themselves, and then use it to teach their congregations. And that's a big thing of what VMI does, and it's a good thing, and it's definitely needed. So they went over and they taught these things, and Peter attended the conferences, and then he started doing conferences at his own expense in Eldoret and teaching pastors there. And Dan told me that he was doing that for about 7 years before VMI started to support him. And lots of times, what VMI will do, they'll be introduced to a guy and he seems like a good guy, but they kind of want to get to know him to see what he's about and whether he's somebody that they want to, have a relationship with and try to support in their efforts. And so Peter was doing this for about 7 years before VMI started to support him. He was, and Ashurin and Priscilla can attest to this, he looks like Emmett Smith of the Cowboys, except for he's about, that tall? But he is the best way to describe him is he's a leader. He's got a lot of charisma about him. He is a leader of the past. I saw some things in the as we were doing this. I mean, he is a leader of the pastors in that Eldoret area, and probably beyond that. I mean, he's kind of got that kind of a personality. He teaches a portion of Foundations at a Bible school weekly in Eldoret. It's kind of a theology, basic theology kind of Bible school, and I forgot the name of it. But it has different locations, and these pastors will teach other, you know, students at and pastors at this Bible school. He shows pictures. He does like an evangelical crusade once a year. He's traveled lately. I know that he's traveled to Northeast Kenya, where there is a lot of persecution from the Muslim population. Kenya's kind of divided. There's the northeast and eastern side, and the northeast is up by Somalia and Sudan up in the north, I believe. But those are Islamic countries. And so on the eastern, northeastern side of Kenya, those are very, very dangerous places for Christians to be. And you don't, if those pastors and those churches in that area of Kenya are very persecuted. Now, where we were in Eldoret and Nairobi, Eldoret, I'll show you, is on the north, is kind of on the west side, and it's not under any sort of persecution like that. But Peter will travel to these persecuted areas and teach these pastors there, and VMI has, he's actually set up conferences where these guys have come in and been taught in Nairobi, and VMI will pay their way and get them some teaching there, and then they go back into their persecuted areas. So Peter's very involved in that. And just meeting him and getting to know him and talk to him and watching him, he is definitely a good guy to be in that position, because I think he's got a lot of respect from the pastors that I saw at the conference that we did, and he's got a lot of energy. I mean, he's got a lot of other stuff going on, I think, besides what I just mentioned. So that was the main reason Sharon and I went. And as we got this thing going, what I gathered is you probably just don't go over there and meet a guy and talk to him. You go over there and they set stuff up. Like, they set up for us to do there a 3-day vacation Bible school, which was the Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday after we got there. And then they set up a 2-day pastor's conference that we did for Thursday and Friday that were mainly the pastors and their wives. They did a wives conference. Pastors and their wives in that Eldoret area. It was pretty much just that area. There was one guy that came from Uganda, and I think maybe another one that came from outside the city, but most of them were from that area. And it was a very, and I'll tell you more about that, but it was a short conference, a lot to cover there. And anyway, that's what happened when we went. You know, the reason why we went was to meet them. What we did when we got there was basically hold this VBS, a Christian school that Peter started, and I think his church supports and Peter supports. And then we did the pastor's conference. So here I'll show you kind of how we got there, if this will work.
Were you a speaker at the pastor's conference?
Indeed. We did a lot of speaking, unfortunately for them. This is how we got there. We started. Now, I had to play around with PowerPoint, and this was kind of fun, so let's see if this works. We started in Austin, flew to New York City at JFK. Then we got on the plane. We went over to Dubai, switched planes there, went to Nairobi, and we stopped in Nairobi for the night. We took JetBlue from Austin to New York City, which I thought was a good flight, and thought JetBlue was good. And then we took Air Emirates, is that it? Emirates Airline? Yeah, Emirates Airline from New York to Dubai and then to Nairobi, and they were great. And you had all kinds of movies you could watch, and you needed them because it was a long flight. That flight from New York to Dubai was about 12, 13 hours. And then Dubai to Nairobi was about 5 hours, if I remember right. So all in all, we were about travel time 22, 23 hours on the airplane, and that, you know, that doesn't count, you know, the airport time, sitting around waiting for your flight to go. I'll say this, it's not, it wasn't that bad going to me. I mean, it was, I guess you were excited about it, and anyway, it didn't seem like that long of a trip, but you were certainly, we were certainly ready to get off the plane by the time we got there. So we got to Nairobi, and we spent the night there. And if you look at, here's Kenya, and if you look at Kenya, I mean, there's Nairobi kind of down on the south side, and Eldoret is right here. So the equator's here. We started, you know, we flew into Nairobi south of the equator, and then we went north of the equator to Eldoret. Eldoret's population, let me make sure I don't have anything else here. Yeah, I'll show you that. That's the, in Nairobi, we stayed at Little Daughters of St. Joseph Catholic Center. It was a Catholic center, and it was run by nuns. It was a relatively nice place. They didn't have hot water, and that's what the room looked like. And the grounds looked like that, which were pretty nice. But everything over there, I mean, you've got a wall, and you've got a gate, and they got a guard on the gate, and you go through the gate and past the guard, and that's what you see when you get past it. I won't say everything, but the stuff like that has gates on it and gate guards. And so, okay, that's the Eldoret Airport. That's the baggage claim at Eldoret. That's a little bit misleading, I guess, as far as what the Eldoret Airport looked like. I thought it was a little, it's better than that. But the baggage claim, that isn't misleading as far as the baggage claim. We walked in there, and I just remember it was leaking water in the baggage claim. So, and we picked up our bags there and went on to our hotel. But anyway, Eldoret, its population of Eldoret is like 300,000. So it's not a small town. It's a large city. Let me see if I got this. Yeah, that's hard to see there. Yeah, you can't really see it. If you can follow the arrow here, this whole area is Eldoret. We stayed here at this place called the Noble Hotel and Conference Center, and it was we had to travel all the way over here to this Haruma district where the slums were, where everything we did was. So anyway, it's Eldoret population is about 300,000. It's fifth largest urban center in Kenya, and according to Wikipedia, it's one of the fastest growing towns in Kenya. What I didn't realize, but was became very obvious when we got there, was that the elevation is like 7,000 to 9,000 feet. I mean, it varies, so it's up there. And I was dressing, you know, I brought stuff for, you know, equator. I mean, I thought it was going to be warm, but it was, and it was warm during the day, but at night it was cool, and I wasn't prepared for that. Anyway, it was cool that time of year. The language they speak there, like I said, is Swahili, but the schools teach English, and most of the adults speak English. That was something else to get used to. They speak English with a, you know, because of the British background, the British inflection. So it's very, to me, it sounds well spoken. You know. It's not like East Texas or, you know, South Texas or whatever. It is a British kind of sound, and it's great. But the other thing about them, everybody there, they were so soft spoken. When they weren't worshiping, I mean, they were loud when they were worshiping at the church, and I'll show you that. But when they were speaking to you, they were very quiet, and so you have this British accent that you can get okay well. But it's soft, and I'm deaf. I mean, I think I'm deaf. I couldn't hear them. And it was a consistent across the board, pretty much everywhere we went. It was a very soft-spoken kind of people. But I'll say this: I mean, they're all friendly. It's a very pleasant people. And we had, I mean, because of the English Swahili thing, We had to use translators at VBS and at the church. At the VBS, the little biddies, you know, the smaller children, they didn't speak English. They were just learning it. You know, some of the mid-age ones were could do a little bit, and the older ones you didn't even need a translator for. But at the church, also, they used a translator, and during the conference, because the different pastors. And that was something else about it, because at the pastor's conference, and I guess at the church, but it struck me more at the pastor's conference, they would back and forth between English and Swahili. Sometimes, I mean, even when, like, say, Peter, I heard Peter speaking one time. He's speaking, and he's talking to the pastors, and he's speaking in English. And the translator may be translating, but then he switches over to Swahili, and I'll understand him, and the translator quits translating, and then he goes back to English. So it's not like he was doing it really in any consistent way. And I asked the guy next to me, I said, why is he doing that? And he said, because when he wants to make a point, he wants to get across, he moves to Swahili. And for whatever reason, he would switch back to English, and then, you know, maybe you could understand what he was saying. But there are portions where, you know, I didn't know what he was saying. I had to ask somebody. Eldoret itself, when you look at it, I'm sharing on Priscilla once again, I don't know what y'all's impression was, but it was it looks like a city. It's not I wouldn't say it's an advanced, I mean, it's kind of like a third world city, I guess is the best way to maybe describe it. Lots and lots of people, lots of people walking. Paved roads in the city itself, and I guess in the more affluent parts, out in the slums and in lots large parts of the other parts of the city, the roads weren't paved, and still lots of people walking around. Drainage ditches, lots and lots of scooters. The scooters were impressive, and that kind of goes to the tax, you know, the traffic laws. The traffic was. Laws are just a suggestion. I mean, those guys, and you say it, we say it and laugh about it around here, but that is absolutely true in Kenya. And they drive on the left side of the road. So if you aren't used to driving in that, there is no way you ought to be driving, because you got to get your car in between, you know, these trucks that are carrying stuff, plus these scooters that are just weaving in and out of traffic, and people walking in front of you, and just a mess. It really, it was something. But they're used to it. And, you know, our driver, we had a driver that took us to and from that worked with Peter. He could get along fine. And you didn't feel, I didn't feel uncomfortable riding with him, but he knew what he was doing. The scooters, lots and lots of scooters. And lots of the people that own scooters, lots of them use them for taxis. And so they'll rent their, you know, you own a scooter, and you rent yourself out as a taxi. And you'll see people with four and five, like a driver and four more people on there on a little scooter. It's not even a motorcycle, man. There's these little scooters. And, I mean, they're zipping around, and they see stuff piled up on them and just getting around. And it's some of the things they do with those scooters is really impressive. And just the first thing impressive about it is that you don't get killed. I mean, if you can drive on a scooter in that traffic and not get killed, you're doing good. Not to mention you can have passengers and you don't get them killed either. But that's kind of the impression I had of Eldoret. There were businesses there, lots of, in the city itself, I think there were a lot of big businesses with, you know, I think one of their major, major economy is like agriculture. It said it's kind of in a very fertile area, so it's kind of an agricultural center. It's also textiles is also a big deal there, and there are several larger companies there. But what we also noticed when you went into the slums and the areas out in there, there's little booths set up or little. You know, just people sitting down on the side, one after the other, selling something. I mean, they may be selling five bananas and three heads of lettuce or carrots or, you know, but the bananas. They sell a lot of those little bananas. Those were good. But just little ones like that. And you might see somebody selling, you know, charcoal, because they cooked over charcoal lots of times and outside. And you had that smell, you would smell. And that's the other thing. It's very dusty, lots of stuff in the air. Got a lot of gas and diesel kind of fumes. And Priscilla had a, and Bernard, the guy that went with us, had a respiratory deal going on. And that was, that whole climate for you guys wasn't good. It was something. It was cool and damp with dust and diesel and all kinds of stuff in the air. Not good for recovering from anything like a cough. The education there, there's a couple of universities there. There's a medical school. And so there is some, you know, it's got some things going for it. Let's see, where did I put it? Oh, I'll talk about that later. Protestant. Yeah, and I'll get to that. Protestant Christian. I'll show you where this is. Let's see if we can get past this. Oops. Oh, I know why I put that in there. That's Peter, and that's Wynn Norin, who went with us. But that man right there is Peter. That's what he looks like. And the guy right there in the striped shirt, his name is Francis. He's the guy that drove us around, and very very nice young man. He's actually a tailor and kind of a youth evangelist type guy. They were both interesting people. So we stayed at this place called the Noble Hotel and Conference Center. That was what the reception area looked like. And once again, you come in it's got a wall, got a guarded gate. You come in that and check in here, and then there was another guarded gate on the other side of where that car's pointing. And that's Sharon outside the little restaurant area at the hotel. They had an outdoor, you can tell there's a little outdoor stuff there. And then over inside, right on this side, there were, they had a restaurant. Typically they have a buffet or you could order. That's what the room looked like, similar to the Little Daughters Catholic Center room. Wasn't heated, no air conditioning. You could open up the windows, but we were worried about the mosquitoes, and so we didn't. And that's why you had the mosquito net. But it was cool enough. We probably could have done it, and I didn't see many mosquitoes, but you just didn't want to chance it. None of us wanted to chance it. But, you know, the lights, this place did have hot water. You'd have to turn it on, and it would take 10 minutes or so to get to hot water, but it would eventually become hot water, which was nice. But because you had the windows closed, when you ran the hot water and you ran the water that long, the bathroom's kind of right behind this bed right over here. Anything in that bathroom just got swamped. I mean, it just, the steam and all that just really got really murky or muddy or damp. And it would come out in the room, which would have cooled that room. Once again, wasn't good for people with respiratory diseases. It was, you know, you could kind of hang out in there, and we had to do a lot of work preparing for our lessons, and so that's what you did when we weren't doing VBS or pastor's conference. And you know, it was a nice place considering, you know, what was around in El Duret. And once again, the people there were just very, very nice. The religion, like you said, Robin, it's mainly Protestant. It's particularly in that area. It's a Protestant area, although Islam is making inroads there, just like it is anywhere else. And in the morning, like usually about 5 in the morning, 5:15 or so, you'd hear the call to prayer here. And it's like funny because of jet lag or something, I kept waking up like 2 in the morning and not being able to go back to sleep. And I know it's almost time to get up because you hear the prayer, you know, the call to prayer about 5:15 or 5:30, and you go, oh no. And then you go to sleep, but you have to get right back up. It was also something interesting about it too is that religion is a mandatory subject in the public schools. And so, and they don't, apparently the schools don't care what religion you teach. You can teach Christianity, and that's what Francis, the guy that I showed you here, that was kind of his ministry. He would go teach Christianity in these public schools. And he was free to do it. And he said the schools liked him to do it because the kids tended to behave for him. And he would, you know, and he supplied that that need for them. And he said he was able to teach whatever he wanted. So he can teach the gospel and whatever, and the schools don't care. So that is a great access to children and students that they had there that we ain't got here. And they're at least Francis and I assume others are taking advantage of that. Probably Islam is too, and it probably depends on the school. But in this area, you know, it's a great opportunity, I guess, that could be taken advantage of. And from observation, just driving around town, you'd see, it looked like I put it this way. There are a lot of churches. And there were a lot of, you'd see signs on the vans and not on the scooters because there wasn't any room for them, but like, you know, Jesus saves or, you know, something about Christ on there. So there's a lot of that. And I remember even in the slums when we were driving through, there'd be these little churches everywhere. And I remember one of them was, what, Jesus Winter Church? Was that it? Yeah, Jesus Winter Church, which tells you something. I mean, there's a lot of these churches. There is not, I don't think there's a lot of good doctrine there. And it's desperately needed. The problem that Peter said, and Dan has told me this too, that the problem there is prosperity theology. Lots and lots of pastors teach prosperity theology, number one, because it makes them money, which is really unfortunate. But the people go because they're so daggum poor, you know, it gives them some hope as far as their financial security goes. And so it's really bad for, you know, it's false doctrine, number one, but it's just bad that it's also used to advantage in a, you know, kind of an economy in a community like this. The other thing that we found out, too, is that assurance of salvation is not taught. I guess is the best way to say that. According to Francis, we had a conversation with him going back from church one day that the churches intentionally did not. Better hurry. The churches did not. They intentionally would not teach assurance of salvation because they were afraid that the people would go out and take advantage of it and just, you know, sin. You know, the same argument that everybody's made about it forever, ever since, you know, the idea, you know, that doctrine, you know, first century church. But they don't. And it's, they've rationalized it that way, that, you know, if we teach it, then people are going to go sin. Well, you know, go ahead.
Is there a Catholic influence?
Not much that I saw. Did you see much of it?
There's
some. Well, we stayed at the Little Daughters of St. Joseph. Yeah, they're there. But that wasn't the reason why Francis, you know, told me the pastor didn't teach it. He said they just don't teach because they're afraid that people will go sin. So they need prayer for that because they just need to suck it up and teach the truth and let God handle, you know, His people. The thing going on there was the elections. There was national elections going on there when we were there. And that in 2007, they had a very violent national election. And so everybody, all the Kenyans were on guard about the elections coming up in this year. They'd had some interim election. They'd had one in 2013. It wasn't as bad. But everybody was, pardon? It's parliamentary government, parliamentary type. So this was an election for everybody. Electing all the positions. And so people were in arms, or up in arms. Eldoret in particular had been a place in 2007 where that was a very disputed election there. And in Eldoret, the group that lost ran the other group that won, I guess the best way to say this, into a church in Eldoret near where we were in the church here. And locked them in there, piled up stuff and set fire and just burned them in the church. Women, children. So that was one of the atrocities that went on at the 2007 election. And people were afraid that was going to happen again. And so there are all these recommendations about how you're supposed to travel to Eldoret during the time of this election. People in Eldoret were, I read in the paper, they were moving, and someone confirmed this too, that they were moving their families, like men would move their wives and children out of Eldoret, pending the election, just to make sure that they'd be safe. So it was a little dicey time. And even when we were there, the head election official in Kenya was kidnapped on Saturday. We got there and was murdered, and they found him on Monday. So,
Mark, that part of the explanation is like people would get their allegiance would go to their tribe.
Yeah,
and
that was.
They would fall back and be against their neighbors and be against their friends because maybe they're from a different tribe.
Their tribal affiliations. Yeah, it's interesting because they still have their tribal identities. And there are 42 tribes, 42 basic tribes. Peter and Francis were sitting at dinner and he was explaining this to me. I said, Peter, what tribe are you? And he told me what tribe he was. Francis told me what tribe he was. And they have these tribal identities even though they live amongst each other. And so when this election thing, they live fine. Until something comes up that triggers this tribal identity and conflict. And that election in 2008 did it, or 2007 did it. One tribe won, the other tribe lost and thought that the guy from the one tribe was corrupt and cheated. And so they tried to run everybody out of town that was of the winner's tribe. And so all that violence was based on tribal affiliations. And the people that they ran into the church were of a particular tribe.
What about the believers,
like Peter and the others, as believers,
do they still belong to different tribes? Because when there's conflict, is there a conflict within the church?
I think that there is.
He said he really preaches against that.
Yeah, he preaches against it.
Even tells his church to be it, because he says that does cause
right, but it's something they got to teach about and against because it's there. It's in their culture. So just like us, we can be race, like races. That's a good example. It's, tribes are about the same way. Yeah. The answer is yes and no. I think, my observation is that they knew my doctrine. They knew where I was from, the church I was from. Dan has known me for quite a while. I'm also on the board, so they kind of know where I'm coming from doctrinally. The teachers that go and do the in-depth conferences, they are typically pastors, and they're doctrinal pastors. They're pastors from doctrinal churches. And the Foundations book is also a doctrinal book that we would pretty much agree with. There's some things in there that, you know, obviously that you might, that I disagree with, but nothing that, you know, is a huge deal. But I think probably there are times when you do team missions like this from a church that maybe they're not vetted as much doctrinally. And so they may, you know, get to, you know, they may teach something that maybe wasn't vetted. So I got to ask Dan. I need to ask Dan about that, because I had a kind of a question about that that came out of what I observed here. So it's a good question, and I think it needs to be understood. Does that make sense? Yeah. For the most part, the conferences are done by doctrinal pastors, and you would know them from like Chafer Seminary. You know, those types of guys, the guys that would go to the Chafer conferences, friends of theirs, you know, that kind of thing. Got anything to add to that? That's just my observation. This is the first one I've been on, so it raises that question a bit. Okay, so I'm going to skip this part because we're running out of time. All right, here's what happened. This is a picture from when we got there. We got to El Dorado on Saturday. We kind of rested, got ready for the next day. And then on Sunday, we went to church. And there were two churches. There was Peter's Church in the Haruma suburb. And then there was another church that I went to in a suburb called Kakuru. I think I pronounced that correctly. And so Bernard, another guy that went with us, Bernard Lake, was supposed to preach it. He preached it at Peter's Church, and I, quote, preached at this other church. And, anyway, I didn't do the kind of preaching that they're used to. Anyway, so we go to this, and this is a picture of us driving. This is the street on the way from Peter's Church over to the church that I was going to speak at. These guys are Salvation Army. And we got behind the Salvation Army, and they were playing musical instruments and marching through the streets on their way to the Salvation Army church. And these little kids right here, you know, everybody's like following them and gathering them, and I thought it was an interesting thing, and I guess they do that every Sunday when they're going to church and just kind of march through the streets and, you know, kind of bring everybody that makes it that far, because they were going pretty good ways, to the church. So that was on the way, and this is pretty much a typical scene in the streets. If you see, you know, kind of this corrugated tin and kind of a structure there, and that drainage ditch, you know, water goes, you know, that's kind of the way it looked. There were little patches usually in many places, even though it'd be like, looked like it was just dense population. There'd be little patches of corn growing here or there. And I guess that somebody owned it and they planted some corn, and somehow they were able to keep people from just decimating it. But I guess they would take it and sell it. This is the church in Kokoru. It was about, you know, kind of hot. You could tell it's, you know, it's a tin building. The guests get to sit on the front, and you get little waters, and they're real nice to you. And you got a little table in front of you, and you're kind of the honored guest. And over, like if I'm looking at you, sitting right over here, was the Apostle Paul and Pastor Rose. And I'll show you their picture. They're the pastors of the church. And they're dressed in African garb, and they are, and it looked like that that's what these, a lot of these churches did. You would see pastors and their wives on Sunday. We saw them walking around on Sunday, and they were dressed in the same kind of thing. Some may be more modern dressed. These guys were dressed in traditional African-looking things. But in this church, and I noticed at Peter's church, I suspect is the same way. Was it, Priscilla, because you went to that one? They had... Yeah, did they wear the matching outfits? Okay. And at this church, there was a couch right over here, and Apostle Paul and Pastor Rose sat there, you know, and it's a nice couch with a little, you know, had one of those, I guess, linen things over it, and they had their, you know, they had the honored place over there. And, well, I will show you. That's the Apostle Paul. And that's Pastor Rose. I don't know why. No. That's the Apostle Bell. I was honorary. Yeah, I don't think, I mean, some of this terminology, I wasn't exactly sure what they meant by it. I wasn't sure if they meant the apostle in the sense of a New Testament, you know, apostle, or if, I don't know. I don't know exactly what they meant, but
Rose and Paul married?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the husband and wife team.
Their husband and wife team. Yeah.
Oh, that's not Peter there?
No. Oh no, that's Pastor Rose.
No.
And that's Apostle Paul. Okay, this one right here. That guy there. That's the Apostle Paul.
The man.
The man. And that right there is Pastor Rose. No, that's of his wife. Her first name is Rose. That's how they were introduced. And we were at their church. And we were at their church. And so he is. Yeah, and the way the church worked. Well, we're running out of time. I got to get going. Yeah, I'm gonna have to go through the pictures pretty fast, but it's interesting. Just briefly, at church they would sing for an hour. Well, actually, they would. It was like most of the day, or a large part of the day. They would have prayer for a while. They would sing and for a while, and then they would have preaching for an hour, and then they did something else while we were in the back with Apostle Paul and Pastor Rose, that I wasn't sure exactly what they were doing. But I think it sounded like singing and talking some more. But it's very, very animated. The prayers were, they got a guy up front with a microphone. He's praying, and everybody else is praying out loud, all at the same time. Just kind of like, it's a cacophony. And the singing is pretty much chorus-based, very African, and lots of dancing. I've got a picture here. I mean, dancing and
keyboard?
Oh yeah, they got a keyboard, and they got keyboard and mics. They might have anything else, but they got a keyboard and mic, and they got somebody can play the keyboard. So yeah, I mean, you might not have much else, but you got a keyboard and mic at an African church. And this is something that I wasn't expecting. Neither was Sharon. As the honored guest, we were asked to come up and, quote, prophesy. And what that meant, I don't know exactly what that meant to them. But what it meant to us was we were going to pray for these people. And, yeah. And so, they asked us to prophesy, but we prayed. Yeah. And so, you know, you have somebody like the guy I was talking to there. He was alcoholic, and he just wanted prayer for that. And Pastor Rose kind of pulled me aside and said, he's an alcoholic. He's got a lot of, his situation's complicated. I said, great, I prayed for him. Anyway, that was a surprise. And, you know, when you're visiting in a church like that and you're guest, you've got this thing to be on your feet and not do anything wrong, but be accommodating to them, I guess. So that was an experience. They were had a time with them after the church, after the service, and enjoyed speaking with them. This is, I'll just go through the pictures real quick. This is the school, and this is the VBS. What's going on right here is games. We did that right out here. Behind this tent to here, in the tent, is crafts. And behind the tent was we did story time, which were parables of Jesus, and kind of traded those things off. This is another view of the church, of the schoolyard. This is looking to one wall. The office is right here. This was kind of their kitchen area, and I think they tended to cook. They cook stuff outside over here, I noticed. And this is the other side. They would feed them lunch. And they fed them, I don't know what they feed them every day, but they fed them pretty good lunch at the VBS. This is looking at the gate. You can see, you know, they had a steel gate that was locked. These little guys out here, these are children that are standing up outside across the street looking over at what's going on inside, which was kind of sad. You wanted everybody to be able to come in, but, you know, you just couldn't. You'd be inundated. They'd just be crazy with kids, because there were kids everywhere. When you walk in these streets or ride in these streets, there are kids, little bitty kids, everywhere. And it was something. This is their water. I think they don't have water piped in. I think they have a truck that comes and delivers water once every couple of weeks. I think Peter told me that. Behind that water here, this little tin building here is the latrine, which was interesting. And the whole goal of our day was not to have to use it. Because you'd have to go use it. You'd have to fill up a bucket with water and then wash it out. So most of the time, I was successful. Sharon, unfortunately. This is Dan Hawkins blowing up a ball. That's Priscilla waiting. This is the first day, waiting to get started. This is Peter and Dan and Priscilla and Bernard, who went with us. This is the school assembly the first day. That's kind of their, I guess, their music leader guy and teacher, chaplain. They did a little singing and stuff for us, and that was fun. These kids are really cute. They're really well behaved. They were real interested in us. They're very attentive. This is their school. This is their school. So they're familiar with basic Bible.
But it's from the slum, and Peter is the minister of the church, and most of them, you know, get free tuition there and get their uniform provided.
They provide the uniforms. Yeah, they provide the uniforms and tuition. Peter told me that tuition is paid by the families that can afford some tuition, but that isn't very many, and so most of them are tuition free. No, it's a matter of numbers, I think. There's only a certain number you can fit in here. I think they had, I counted, 10 classrooms maybe? Anyway, they had 200-some-odd kids. They had 220 kids going here. I didn't ask them. Let's see. This is craft time, and that's the wind that went with us.
So,
BMI finances the
school?
No. Peter does. Peter and his church. I don't think VMI contributes. We've contributed some supplies.
Local church function.
Mm-hmm.
Local church function.
Mm-hmm.
It's also a public school.
No.
No.
It's private.
Private.
Yeah. You remember this.
It's like
a year-round
school where they hear where they go for maybe 9 weeks or something like that. They have 3 weeks off. And so it kind of goes year-round, but they take off probably 3 or 4
So y'all just came in on the regular school
week? We did. We came in at the very end of this session.
Yeah.
They just kind of turned the school over to us for 3 days at the very end.
Yep. Let's see, what else about the school? Oh, there's kids with their crafts. There's something else about it. The teachers, I think Peter told me the teachers were paid. At first they weren't paid, but I think they were able to pay them now, like $50 a month or something like that. The teachers to me were, they seemed to me to be good teachers in the sense that they cared a lot. They apparently cared a lot for their kids. They participated. They didn't just let us do VBS. They participated for the most part with their kids in the VBS, particularly the teachers in the younger ages. And that was something I thought that was, to me, that was pretty impressive. I thought they had some pretty darn good teachers there as far as their desire for the kids and their heart for the kids. There's another one with a craft. There's more crafts. There's when you're white and you go here, especially if you're blonde and you're white and you go here, they want to touch you. So they want to feel your hair. They want to see what it feels like because they don't feel it. I mean, even me, I mean, my hair's not blonde. They want to touch all over your arms and feel your white skin and touch your hair, see what that feels like. And so I wonder if that isn't why I got sick. And you're thinking like, man, I wonder where these kids' hands have been. Because there ain't a lot of places to wash them up, and there's lots of dusty stuff there. But they were really cute. This was teaching, I guess, Sharon, y'all were doing the parable there and the song of the wise man built his house on the rock. And those are three of the teachers, and that's probably the, looks like second, maybe first grade, something like that. Leave that. There's another group of kids doing the same. They're coloring their pictures there. There's Priscilla with a child that she found. And, yeah, she's wandering around. Priscilla found her, and now she's back doing work at your house, right? You were able to get her through customs in the bag, and... Yeah. And there's Wynn with the classroom. That's kind of what the classrooms look like inside. Not a lot of light. They needed some light. No air conditioning, anything like that. So I imagine it's pretty hot in the summertime. This is the whole group. We handed out the bracelets that the VBS, our VBS kids did a whole bunch of bracelets for these guys. And we handed those out the last day. And they were, you know, the gospel bracelets with the colors on them. And they really liked those. And at the beginning, we had done the gospel fuzzies glove. And they really liked that, and they liked the song. And so this kind of reinforced the gospel fuzzies glove with the gospel bracelets. It's interesting. We had to change the gospel fuzzies song from, what was it? Black means out of center, and we changed it to dark. Wasn't that it?
I think they do that
every day. Yeah, okay. Nowadays, I guess. Anyway, this is an inside Peter's house. He had us over for lunch most of the days, and we'd kind of rest there and then go back to it. This is outside Peter's house, and that's Peter's daughter, Melanie. And that's Bernard, who went with us. Or if I got time for this. Probably not. I'll just show you. This was one of the presentations that the kids did for us. I missed the big one because I was sick. I'll go back. See if I can do this. Give you a feel. No sound. Sorry. that's kind of what, let's see if I can get the sound going here. I can't. I'm not going to worry about it. Well, maybe I can. Oh, heck. Oh, well, I can't get it. Don't worry about it. Well, exit of that. Current slide. Oh well, this isn't working. Let's go from here. See if that'll work. Yeah. They go up to eighth grade. I think the school has been around a while. I think Peter's been involved with it for like 3 years. So I think they're adding as they go up. They haven't gotten that all yet. Right. This is, I can't seem to get this thing going again. Anyway, this is, you can see here, this is a,
icon at the bottom, I think.
Where is it? There?
Try that one up there.
Eh. Not going to worry about it. We're running out of time. This is the view of Peter's church during the pastor's conference. And that is Bernard teaching at the conference. I wish I could show this, but I can't. This was the another. Well, let's see if I can, there we go. It's kind of what things look like when you're at church. That kind of gives you a little feel of what things are like there. That's Bernard preaching again. This was the ladies. These are the ladies at the conference. And I guess what are y'all doing there? Singing? Looks like it. And this is another. This is Priscilla. He's teaching at the women's conference. Notice they're all wearing coats. That was another funny thing. I mean, it was cool to them, and you'd see these little guys, you know, wearing coats and their hats pulled down, and you're like, man, this is great. And you're in maybe a long sleeve shirt. So anyway, those are the pictures of that. I guess I've got some short thoughts here that we'll go over as far as on VBS. I've been through some of these. I've said this before, but this was very evident for both the church and VBS. Everybody loves to sing and dance there. It is part of what they do, and they get their music going. I mean, the kids are dancing, and the teachers are dancing, and singing, and they're very demonstrative that way. But it's not a forced thing. I mean, they didn't care if we were doing it or not. I mean, they were that's just how they did things. Everyone was very kind to us, at the VBS and at the school itself, they don't have a lot of supplies or equipment. They don't have any playground equipment. I mean, the stuff that we brought for crafts and games were kind of what they had. And we left all that stuff there for them to be able to use. So the school can use things like that. the feedback that we got from them was just being there, and this goes to kind of my original thought about this, just us coming and being there, they said, was very encouraging to them. It was encouraging them, they said, just to know that there are, you know, other brothers and sisters in Christ out there that care enough about them to come from, you know, U.S. and halfway across the world just to, you know, just to see them get to know them and participate. So that was just us coming and being with them was encouraging to them, they said. Someone at some point during the deal brought up the idea of possibly going back and doing another VBS that might be more evangelistic and reach outside of that. But, you know, and Sharon, this is just my opinion. I mean, and my thought from this, when Sharon and I were talking about that, we thought, you know, it's something that the local church there can do, and that what our role here was, as far as the VBS, we showed them kind of what a VBS, what the way we do VBS. And they participated, like I said, the teachers participated in that. The only thing they really didn't participate in was the planning of it. So they saw how it's done, and they can do that themselves. And so I'm not, if I were going to go back, or if somebody said, Mark, you know, and Sharon, I think you're the same opinion, you know, go back and let's do a VBS at this school, at this church, I'm not sure that I'd really think that that'd be a good idea. You know, I'd want to do something else, in other words. So that's just my opinion. And Priscilla, I don't know if you have the same opinion of that or not. I think it was good for what we did. I think we showed them how to do it, but I think that now they know how to do it and they can do it. You know, if they do it evangelistically, they can bring kids, you know, and the families into their church. And they are, the churches and the people I talk to are pretty evangelistic people. They will go out and they will talk to people. So it's not like they're sitting on their rear ends in church and not doing anything. They're pretty evangelistic minded from the people I talk to. So that goes to my next point. So I think from the schools, like I said, the school needs prayer, obviously, and that's something we can pray for, because I think it's a good thing, and the teachers and everything are doing a good job. They need materials and they need training in Bible knowledge, and I think Peter is the way that we teach the pastors, and the pastors teach their congregation, and that's going to work its way through to the school. That's my thought. As far as the Pastors and Wives Conference, I didn't explain a whole lot about what went on there, but it was basically a crash course in some of the materials in Foundations. And it was a lot to cover, and it was hard to figure out whether the guys, any of it really took. You got some feedback, but because you had to do a translator and because you couldn't really have any sort of give and take, and you didn't have a whole lot of time for that anyway. So it's hard to tell what took. And I asked Peter about that, and he said that just the introduction to these ideas was good, but, you know, I think people need to come in and do a longer, more in-depth, more interactive kind of a conference with the pastors. Now, there were about, I mean, you couldn't tell from there, but there were about 120 people, you know, pastors and wives that came to that thing. And that goes to Peter's leadership and influence, because he brought these guys in from, I mean, they're all different kinds of denominations and backgrounds and education levels. And he got them there. So he can stir up the interest, and there's stuff that can be done to teach, to get them good doctrine. Let's see. Most of the pastors, from talking to Peter, from what I observed, the pastors have, you know, they'll have a Bible. I mean, their congregations may not always have a Bible, but the pastors will. They don't have much in the way of resources to help them study the Bible outside of that. And so, to me, that's where in Eldoret, in that church community there, that's what needs to happen. Because, like I said, it is a it's got churches everywhere, and it's got preachers everywhere, and it's got them preaching false doctrine everywhere. If you get preachers, if you get teachers there that are interested in learning and teaching the Word, then it's going to make a big difference there. In that regard, it's probably not that much different than here. You know, it's just a different culture and a different context, but we got lots of people that don't know doctrine and aren't, lots of teachers that don't know doctrine and are teaching false doctrine. Same thing here. But we have access to resources that they don't. So they need resources and they need teachers to teach them. And I think that's a thing that's needed there. So Sharon, I don't know about y'all's any feedback on the women's conferences or anything like that, but it was pretty. Things got messed up because people got sick, and so we had to really, you know, when you have two people out that were going to participate in something, it kind of makes you have to be very flexible in the schedule. And so I think the women's conference may have had to be more flexible than we did at the men's conference, because I don't think Dan had as much to participate in as maybe Wynn did in the women's conference. So I think that's it. That's the report from Eldoret, Kenya. So we got any other questions? I'm sorry we went over so much. It rained almost every day we were there. That last day of EBS, I mean, it rained in the morning, and we had to really work around the mud. And the first day of EBS, it rained the night before, and we had to work around the mud there. There's lots of mud when it rains. I don't know that was usual at that time of year, but it did. Any other questions? Yeah, Eric? Yeah, they can get internet access, and most everybody's got phones. But we talked about that, because I said, Peter, you know, people got phones. I mean, they can get electronic books on phones and that kind of thing. He said, yeah, they got phones, but they don't have smartphones. They don't have, a lot of them don't have that ability to get stuff on their phone, and I don't know that they have a lot of computers. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah, and you had a conversation with Peter Monday, right?
And the Women's Ministry Project for Christmas is going to be doing gift bags for the kids at school. And it's basically some school supplies, toothbrushes, socks, use up your own Christmas cards to throw them in, and some sweet stuff just because for kids it's Christmas.
And they'll love it.
So we'd like to have the women all involved, the kids involved, and the men can write checks to cover the show. So I'm thinking maybe because we need to get this off the ground quickly, and the cheapest way to ship it is surface, and that's going to be 2 to 3 months, we need to do this by September, so maybe we need to do a meeting Sunday after church.
So women's ministry needs to have a meeting Sunday after church to talk about this?
Well, anybody who shows up.
Yeah.
Okay, so everybody.
It's Labor Day, a weekend, so I don't know if there are any fewer people here or not. But anyway, that's
we get show up.
So we need... So anybody, that people that are interested in participating in this project need to attend a meeting after church, not just the women of the ministry. Okay. Yes, we need to announce that Sunday as well.
No, you don't need to bring anything, because we'll go over. And part of it is like each bag, you've got to be exactly alive. You know, nobody gets more, so it'll basically be the same thing in every bag. Okay. So we'll get it.
Thing is, you're going to be what? 300? Yeah,
200.
200. 200.
Okay. Is that it? Everybody ready to go? We're way late. Let's pray. Father, we thank you for all that you've given us. Thank you for this opportunity that you gave Sharon and Priscilla and I and the rest of us to go visit these churches, these brothers and sisters in Kenya, and to bring this report back so that we kind of understand what's happening there and maybe what the needs are there and what we can do and the things we can pray for. And we just rejoice in that you're active and your spirit is active in all these countries and in different ministries and in different ways, and that there are needs there and we can pray for them, and certainly need for teaching and for instruction. And we pray for interested pastors and good teachers to go to them and for receptiveness. We ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen.